This podcast is sponsored by FHE Health and their Shatterproof program for first responders.
What makes Shatterproof a very unique program is it's one of the only programs in the country that first responders can go to that is 100% all first responders. Everybody's in pretty bad shape when they get here. And then 30 days later, when you can see the transformation and the difference in people when they've had 30 days of counseling, working with therapists, working with a psychiatrist, getting the neuro treatment, doing the breath therapy that's done here, the transformation that happens with the clients is really humbling to be able to work around and see, because people are getting better here. And it just shows that there's a need for the first responder community to deal with behavioral health issues and take them seriously and offer treatment to people that may need help out there. They should be afforded the ability to come get help when they need help. It has gotten better, but we still have a long way to go.
So excited to have my next guest on the show. Barbara Rubel is on. She's a subject matter expert, keynote speaker, and doing wonderful things for our first responder communities. Such a great and informative show. Barbara Rubel, next on the CJ Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have my next guest on the show, Barbara Rubel. She is a subject matter expert, a nationally recognized keynote speaker, an award-winning author who is passionate about helping first responders, mental health professionals, educators, victim service providers learn practical strategies for wellness. And she is right down the block from me in Boca. I just found that out. I'm in Pompano. Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you so much for inviting me on your show.
Yeah, I'm glad for you to finally get on. Thank you so much. So you're all over the place. You talk to so many first responders, helping first responders. What was the catalyst behind this? I mean, I know your backstory a little bit, but what can you tell the listeners?
Well, in 1986, I was in the hospital about to give birth. Not to one baby, not to twins, but to triplets.
Oh my God.
When I was told that my father, a retired New York City police officer, he was a sergeant, used my mother's weapon because she was also a police officer, both retired. He used her gun to kill himself. And he had deteriorating discs in his back and he could not live with the pain any longer. And I could not believe that my dad wasn't going to be there to be a grandpa to triplets. But when you are in that dark place, whether physical agony or mental agony, and you can't get out of that darkness, perhaps he felt it was the best thing to do, but it wasn't. It was the worst thing that happened in my life. Killing yourself, dying by suicide, impacts not only myself as the daughter or his wife or my brother, but his friends, the community, the other officers who knew him and respected him. He was a great guy, but I think he just felt like he didn't belong anymore. The pain was too great. And perhaps also he felt like he might've been a burden. But you know, what's so interesting. People actually say to me, why would he kill himself right before becoming a grandpa? And I'm like, well, is there ever a good time to die by suicide? Yeah. There's never a good time to kill yourself because we are so impacted by it.
Jeez, I am so sorry that happened, Barbara. And did you ever see any signs from your father? Any red flags, you know, isolation any of that stuff?
You know what's so interesting about suicide? I'm a suicidologist. My specialty is postvention. I have facilitated suicide loss support groups. I got involved with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, American Association for Suicidology, SPAN, SAVE. I was really, after he died, got involved because I had to do something. Very instrumental griever. I even went back to college, to Brooklyn College. I already had a degree in psychology. But I went back for my degree, a master's degree in thanatology, because I wanted to know more. Why do people kill themselves? Do other people grieve like me? Am I the only one who's traumatically bereaved? And yes, there are warning signs, there are red flags. But I'll tell you something very interesting. From the years of experience as a group facilitator with suicide loss survivors, so many people feel good before they die. They join a gym. They plan a vacation. They get a new spring wardrobe. They reach out to friends and say, hey, let's have lunch on Saturday and kill themselves on Friday. So there is something that goes off in their brain that says, I don't have to deal with this pain anymore. Mm-hmm. And I feel good. So we have to look for the euphoria. We have to look for not the rumination of, you know, life sucks, but life's pretty good right now. So it's not just risk. If we knew, Patrick, if we knew why someone is going to kill themselves or when they're going to kill themselves, we'd be able to
absolutely. This.
So I think we have to just do the best we can as a human and listen to people when they hurt and smash that stigma that so many people talk about as first responders and let them know that it's okay to share the pain, to share the grief, to share the trauma. You know, many, many people think that they're just burned out, but the first responders are experiencing compassion fatigue, mm-hmm. which is both burnout and secondary traumatic stress. They're also experiencing vicarious trauma, a dead baby in the backseat of a car, you know, a domestic violence where you see the woman dead from her husband's beating. So it's not just the job or the cumulative nature of the trauma. It is understanding that the other person experienced the horror, but you're experiencing the symptomology. And you have to know what to do with that. The problem with first responders is they know what to do with that. After work, they'll go for a drink with their buddies.
Yeah, I was going to say they self-medicate.
You know, hey, yeah, there's a bar on the corner. Hey, we got this. So we have to rewire our brains to say, okay, what else can we do instead of going for that drink or going for the drugs or just, you know, harming ourselves. We, you know, going to the gym is a really, I mean, physical activity.
Absolutely.
But when I was writing the book Living Blue with Jason Palomera, what kept coming up in the research is peer to peer. Speak to someone who gets it, not someone who's going to say, hey, let's go for a drink. You know, we don't want that validation. We need someone who is effective in listening to you and is there for you and wants you to get well. And you were just sharing with me before the show that you're a facilitator.
Yes.
That's great. You walk the walk.
Yeah. That's, you know, that is when you said, you know, somebody who gets it, Barbara, I mean, first responders, as you know, are a different breed. You know, you most first responders, when they're going through pain and they're opening up, they want to open up, they want to talk to somebody like you or me or somebody who understands, who can talk the talk. I'm not saying first responders are better. I'm not trying to imply that. I'm just saying you know, because you know, first responders see trauma every single day. Most people out there, they see trauma, but not to the level first responder do. So you have to treat first responders differently than you do other people. But yes, so when I talk to somebody, you know, first thing they always ask, okay, who are you? Obviously, you know, what do you do? What's your background? As soon as I say I'm a retired cop, they say, okay, you get it. Yeah, I get it. I am much more empathetic now, Barbara. I tell people this all the time. I am much more empathetic now than I ever was as a cop. Not that I wasn't empathetic, but since I went through my suicide attempt and I had suicidal ideation, I had a gun to my head, all that stuff, I never tell somebody, which I used to tell somebody that were suffering, I'd just be happy. That doesn't work. That's like telling an alcoholic, yeah, just don't drink.
Right.
it doesn't work. So what, you get it, I get it.
What is it that they can do? You know, when they are so overburdened, so stressed, so, and so many deal with moral injury.
Absolutely.
It's a horrible thing because their supervisor didn't do the right thing, or they couldn't do the right thing, or they know what they should have done, but they couldn't do it because their hands were tied. Moral injury, secondary trauma, vicarious trauma, compassion fatigue. And as I mentioned before, I'm a thanatologist. I want to know, how are you in pain grieving? Mm-hmm. The emotional, physical, cognitive, behavioral, spiritual, religious reactions, because you are bereaved. You were robbed of that person. Mm-hmm. So, and it's not only death-related loss. There's non-death-related loss when your partner retires. It's a huge loss.
Or we were talking about when you get injured on the job and you have to quit, or you have to retire, medically retire. I mean, there's all kinds of different trauma out there when that was your identity for however long it was. You know, so now you are forced to retire, you're injured, or God forbid something worse, but you can't do that job anymore. What are you going to do now? So that so much, and I struggled with that for a while. It's like I was telling you before we started, you know, who am I? Okay, what am I doing? I'm so used. I spent most of my adult life in a uniform, military, law enforcement. What do I do now? Who am I? So, yeah, I mean, all these things that you talk about. What's that?
What strategies are you using to cope with that? And where did you learn those strategies? You know, many first responders have high ACEs score, adverse childhood experiences, and they might not have had that secure attachment with their parent. And so through life, they don't feel secure in their attachments. And so we have to also look at, how did you cope with some childhood trauma? Or how did you cope with a past loss? Because the way we cope, we bring that into our daily life. Mm-hmm. So we need to learn new strategies. So I'm curious, what strategies, when you're working with someone, what do you share? What do you think that they should do?
The first thing when they're struggling, what I tell first responders, pick up the phone and talk to somebody. Not just talk to somebody who you can trust, because you don't want to talk to anybody. Talk to somebody, you know, who, and I tell first responders is, all right, who's in your tribe? Who are you surrounding yourself with? Because there's people in your tribe that are probably not good for you. I'm willing to bet that are toxic, that are trying to bring you down, instead of push you up. So the first thing I tell first responders is, be careful who you associate with.
Very good.
Because you are who you associate with. I don't care if you're a kid or an adult. So, and then I tell people, Barbara, my circle of influence is so tiny now. I have a ton of friends, but my circle of influence is about this big. And I do that on purpose, not because I don't trust people, because I want people in my life now that are bringing me up, not, you know, pushing me down. Law enforcement is an inherently toxic environment. That's not a dig on law enforcement. I love cops. I'm a retired cop, but people don't call us when things are great. People call us when shit hits the fan and you see trauma and trauma and the worst of mankind. That's part of the job, but that rubs off on you until you become cynical about everything. Everybody sucks. The job sucks. Life sucks. Everything sucks. So that's going to rub off in you. And it did on me. So that's the first thing I tell them. Okay, who are your influences? Who are you hanging yourself on? You know, and if you're going through some struggles, if you want to do something, God forbid, hurt yourself, pick up the phone and talk to somebody. I really believe, and I tell people this, you have all the tools inside of you to recover, to become better. My job as a group facilitator, or, you know, working in behavioral health, is to help you find those. But you have to do it yourself. I tell people, nobody's coming to save you. Nobody's going to swoop in and take away all your problems. So my job, and your job probably, is to help them see that they can save themselves.
Yeah. But many first responders don't even know their strengths, those character traits that uplift them.
Absolutely.
And so they move from a place of weakness. So if we could say, well, you know, love of learning is a strength. Perhaps you want to learn more about mental health and well-being and financial health. Another one is creativity, right? So maybe you could be more creative.
Absolutely.
And plan your goals and whatever. If they could work on at least three strengths and then put those strengths into practice, they'll be okay.
Absolutely.
It's hard to even figure out those strengths.
And I tell people in therapy, I say, look, when you're in therapy, because we're inpatient, Barbara, at Shatterproof, we're inpatient. It's about a 30-day treatment continuum. You're in a bubble here. We're treating a good, beautiful campus. You're in a bubble. You're in treatment. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. The hardest part of treatment is your aftercare. Because now you're going back to your triggers. You're going back to your environment. You're going back to, you know, your environment, your people. So that is the hardest part of treatment, if you ask me, the aftercare, your IOP or whatever it looks like, your aftercare. So you have to work on it every day. I'm still in recovery. I still talk to a therapist, and I'm not embarrassed to say that, because it's not like a one-stop, a fix. Now I'm all better. I never have to worry about it. No, you have to work on it every day.
Yeah, but you sharing that, you mentioning that to your listeners and viewers, what happens is they say, well, you know what? He was a cop and he's being so honest about his mental health. Why can't I?
Absolutely.
So you might be saving a life right now by talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I share it. Not, hey, look at me. But no, because I am in the business just like you to help people.
Yes.
To teach people that they can help themselves. And they can recover. They can maintain sobriety. They can mitigate their mental health challenges.
Yeah, but don't you also find that many want to then give back? They want to become
Absolutely.
A group facilitator. They want to get on the cop-to-cop phone. They want to do, and because they've learned so much.
That's what happened to me, Barbara.
It's amazing. But you know what I find when I talk to first responders? They talk about gratitude.
Absolutely.
And what they are grateful for, because so much horror through their 20 or 30 years on the force, they've seen so much that they look for moments of gratitude in their life, and they are so grateful for that. And also moments of awe. That to me, they taught me so much years ago where I first learned about this, moments of awe. Mm-hmm. It was at a conference for first responders. It was at least 10 years ago where someone said, you know, you're speaking, you're the keynote speaker, and I really appreciate this because it was the end of my keynote. And he said, but now I'm not going right to the next workshop. I'm going outside. I'm going to look up at the sky. I'm going to take a deep breath. I may even look at a flower, and then I'll come back. And he said, that's the moment of awe in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're in such a hurry. Conference is over because I'm a keynoter. Conference is over. Okay, let's go here. Let's go. No, pause and appreciate and show yourself some love, you know?
Absolutely.
It's beautiful.
That's what I tell, the first responders, the clients that we have, when I'm running a group, not all the time, but if it's applicable, I said, two things that really help me in treatment is, one, living in the moment. Now, we're always, most of us are trying to look down the road around the corner. Mm-hmm. Instead of living in the, that's really all meditation is. It's just the here and now.
Being mindful
of, your breath, the seat you're on. I mean, being present. And then the second thing is owning my shit, taking responsibility for whatever it is in my life.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's 100% accountability.
Yeah.
Because I see people, you talk to a lot of people. I see people in my business that are like, well, I'm not an alcoholic. Really? Or, it wasn't my fault. The brass has it out for me. Look, dude, you can spin it any way you want,
mm-hmm.
but you played a part in it. I'm not saying 100%, but own your part of it.
Yes.
Own your part of it. I tell people all the time, Barbara, I was married twice. My second, my first wife, I get along with, great person, have two kids together. Second wife, not so much, mm-hmm. but you know what? I put her through hell. And I mm-hmm. tell people I would have divorced myself during that time.
Yeah.
So I'm owning my responsibility. I'm owning my part in it. So I think that's what helps me, living presently and owning whatever the hell you have to take accountability for, because we all have to be accountable.
Yeah. And identifying those strategies that will work.
Absolutely.
Because not everything works.
Not everything works.
Yeah.
So I might listen to Barbara and say, oh my God, that was an amazing keynote. I'm going to take this from around to take this there. Oh, that didn't resonate, mm-hmm. but I'm going to take these things. Okay. That's how it works.
Exactly.
Whatever strategy works for you, come, build on that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I created my fabulous, I have a fabulous framework for my keynotes. And the F is about flexibility. Yes. And I always talked about a flexible mindset, stop being rigid. But now it's about working in the job as a flexible, like with shift work. That has to change. It needs to be more family friendly.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the F, and A is attitude. You know, where does your attitude come from? Where do your biases come from? And B is about boundaries. We don't keep our boundaries.
No.
They're constantly being pushed. They're being violated. Learn to say no.
I say that all the time.
It's not that hard. So FABU is being united, connected, whether it's to God or your, you know, your dog. I mean, whoever you're connected to. So it's FABU is united. L is laughter. Have a sense of humor.
Got to have a sense of
optimism.
Humor.
Try to be. They're so pessimistic.
I know.
So like, because I'll ask them, how many optimists are in the room? Nobody raises their hand. You know, how many pessimists? And everybody. Yeah. They're all raising their hand. And sometimes, Patrick, I'll say, how many humans are in the room? And only two or three hands go up of 500. I'm like, well, who the hell are you people? You know? And then the U in fabulous is understanding job satisfaction, why you are the right person to be a first responder. But the most important thing is the S, and that's self-compassion. That's work. You have to be kind to yourself when you screw up, when you make a mistake, when you do the wrong thing. Show yourself loving kindness, because we're human and we will screw up and things won't go right. And we have to learn those skills to breathe into the moment, like you said, being mindful and just being present. But a lot of people don't like themselves. They don't like
absolutely.
So they don't want to be in the present with them. They'd rather be out drinking with other people who are just as screwed up as they are.
One of the things, I don't know if you know who Gary Vaynerchuk is.
Yes.
Yes, Gary V. So you might have seen this a couple of years ago. He was giving a YouTube presentation. And I use this in therapy sometimes, where he says, he comes out and throws out the stat 400 trillion to one.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, what the hell does that mean? He's like, that's the statistical probability of you being born.
Wow.
That's science. So I share that sometimes with group and clients, because it really is a miracle you're here. The point is, we're not here for very long.
Right.
So why live your life in misery? Why live your life pessimistic? Why you live your life? You know, nobody is going to, on your deathbed, say, or you're not going to say, hey, I should have worked more. I should have bought that Rolex. I should have had the boat. Nobody cares about that shit. What people care about is, I should have loved more. I should have spent time with my family more. I should have been more compassionate, not only with other people, but with me. Those are the things that really matter. And you said earlier, and I believe 100%, Barbara, about being grateful. Every day before my feet even hit the floor, I sit in bed for a couple minutes and I'm grateful.
Mm.
Because no matter what kind of crappy day people are having, what kind, you know, people, oh, my life, shit. Okay, well, you always have something to be grateful for. First of all, you're above ground. You're alive.
Right.
And every day is a new chance to make a change, make an impact, change the course. So I love what you said about being grateful, because I practice that every day.
Yeah. Well, Gary, because I watch him and he's
great guy.
He's raw.
Yeah, he doesn't care. He doesn't care.
Oh my God. He says,
but he's so funny.
He is funny, but I love the rawness of him.
Oh, yeah.
So we also have to recognize that there are so many different books. There are so many different philosophies and speakers and YouTubers and podcasts. We have to find what resonates in us.
Absolutely.
And just go on that path. It could be a spiritual path, a religious path, a book learning path, a YouTube day of YouTube, and just watch what other people are doing. Just reach out, like you said, reach out to people who get it.
Yeah.
And that's the most important thing, because you can't say, oh, come on, look at all the good things in your life. Yeah, that doesn't work. Because all we're doing is ruminating about those things that are not working.
Yeah.
And we need strategies and skills to fix that. But we have a lifetime of problems. And the way we were, our personality, the way we were with our friends and family, all the bad things that happened to us, we bring that to the job.
Absolutely.
And we have to recognize it's not just the trauma, the grief, the loss, the bureaucracy, the coworkers who you can't stand, the supervisor who doesn't know what he's doing. It is a lifetime of adverse childhood experiences and traumas and past losses that have not been resolved.
Yeah. And that's why it's so important for the listeners out there, or our first responders, please reach out to Barbara. Her information is going to be out in the show notes. But, you know, I think what the biggest challenge with first responders, Barbara, and you know this, is they just have this, I can't reach out because people are going to talk shit about me. They're going to look down on me. They'll take away my gun, you know, and those might be valid concerns, you know, but there is no, be humble, learn how to come forward. Your mental health, your overall health and wellness is more important than the job. Because if you are not taking care of yourself and you're not 100%, how are you going to be there for the public? How are you going to be there for your family and your kids? Yeah. I talk to people all the time and I'm like, let's come down to treatment of Florida. They're like, well, man, you know, I have this vacation planned. You know, I can't. I have this thing. You're an alcoholic, dude. The vacation's always going to be there. Always going to be there. So do you want to go to vacation and be hammered in front of your kids yet again? Or do you want to come down to treatment to get a hold of this, maybe get better? Mm-hmm. That way you can enjoy your next vacation. So a lot, not just first responders, but people will make every excuse under the sun not to help themselves. It's only when I think people hit rock bottom.
That's right.
Like I did. Until people say, oh, shit, I lost my marriage, lost my house, lost this. Oh, I guess I should get help now.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate because what you're talking about, and I agree with you 100%, is let's learn how to catch people before they fall into the stream, not downriver and pulling them out. Mm-hmm. So
we're finally talking about that, even in recruitment.
Yeah,
you know, we are looking at all their ACEs scores. We're looking at their previous traumas. We're looking at their personality types to see if they could manage the traumas that are
absolutely.
So that's great.
Absolutely. So what if people can want to reach out to you and say, I love Barbara, and you're wonderful, by the way. You're right down the road, Barbara. We got to get you on the campus. See Shatter.
I will definitely love that.
Thank you. If people want to reach out to you, how can they reach out to you?
Well, my website is griefworkcenter.com, GRIEFWORKCENTER.com, griefworkcenter.com. They could hook up with me on LinkedIn. My email is my name, Barbara Rubel, RUBEL, @barbararubel.com. So they have a lot of ways. And also, you know, I come up like in Google, number one, if you type in keynote speaker, vicarious trauma, like I have so many articles and research.
She does.
So I'm all over Google, but I would like to just share something that you
absolutely
said, so important. On page 211 of Living Blue, the book that I wrote with Jason Palomera, you said, keep going, no matter how dark it gets. I have been in dark places and there is light if you open your mind and let it in.
Yeah.
That is, it's profound.
Yeah. And it helps, I think. You know, and, you know, when I gave you that quote a while ago, I mean, it's just like, I without going into a religious area, but I'll say it anyway, I just gave it to God. You know, I grew up pretty strict Catholic and look, I put it in God's hands and you know, just humbled myself. You know, there is light. You know, if you humble yourself and you want to get better, there is light on the other side. You know, you have to go through the storm to see the light, you know? And so, yes, I mean, I really do believe that. Now, unfortunately, a lot of people, Barbara, you know this, I mean, they have to go through some tough times. That's life, but there is hope. You know, there's always, if you work at it, you know, and you have good people, you know, in your life, like you, that they can talk to, you're going to come out on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah. And also families need to know that they are not alone.
Yeah, absolutely.
There are blue families who help other blue families or firefighters or EMTs to speak to other spouses, to have family events. We have to include the family. It's not just the soldier. It has to be the entire team, wife, child, grandparent, you know, just make it a family affair.
FHE Health, my company, and we just started for the first responder program, Shatterproof, the one I work for. Mm-hmm. We just started another podcast called First Responder Families Podcast. And that is a podcast that is hosted by our Director of Family Services mm-hmm. that we just started for people you just talked about. The yeah. families, because as a first responder, say you go to treatment, Barbara, and you're a cop, and okay, what about the family that's left behind? They yeah. still have trauma. They still are dealing with stuff. You come back from treatment, you're better. Okay, but what about the husband or what about the spouse or what are we doing for them? So this is a step in the right direction.
Oh, God bless you. That's beautiful. That's yeah. just wonderful.
I love it.
We cannot forget the families
no.
because, you know, as a thanatologist, that's who I work with. Those are my peeps.
Absolutely.
It's family left who their husbands were murdered. Their wives killed themselves. It's hell out there. So we need each other. So yes. important to know you are not alone.
You are not alone. You're wonderful, Barbara. One last, let me ask you this. So for a person out there, I'm going to ask you two things.
Mm-hmm.
Give somebody some of your wisdom who might be struggling, not like suicidal. And if you are, please, you know, call 911. I'm going to put up some resources that you can read in the show notes, but somebody who needs, you know, maybe is coming down on themselves. They don't think they're good enough, mm-hmm. you know, struggling with some things. What would you tell them?
I would tell them to close their eyes and imagine that they are talking to someone who they always wanted to talk to, a leader in the field, Jesus, a grandparent who passed away many years ago, and to have this imaginary conversation with them and allow that entity to help them and guide them and be patting them on the back, on the shoulder and saying, I'm here for you. What do you need from me? I'm going to walk this walk with you. You are not alone. And so it's that power that empowers you.
Wow. I love that. It made me think of, I was watching a Rogan show a while ago and he had a guest on mm-hmm. and they were talking about the afterlife, heaven and hell. And Rogan asked this guest, he said, what do you think hell is? And the guy said, you don't want to know my definition of hell is dying and meeting the person I could have been.
Wow.
Isn't that profound?
That is truly profound. So let's focus in on that now and say, I don't want to be that
absolutely.
I will be the person that I can be. I will reach out to those people that can help me. I will ask for help.
Absolutely.
I won't be alone in this. I have my God. I have my dog. I have whoever I need. I am not alone. That is the most important thing.
That's powerful. Now, the second part of this mm-hmm. is what advice you came from, you know, you had parents, they're cops for a long, long time, law enforcement family. You see all the stuff that's going on, the climate and law enforcement now. What advice would you give for somebody who comes to you and says, hey, Barbara, I'm thinking about becoming a cop?
I would say that you have to be very strong in your belief system, be very strong in your values, really get in touch with your greatest strengths. Have a team around you who will support you when things go wrong and stay focused on your future. If that is what you want to be, then do it. But make sure you stay true to your faith, to your family, to your value system, to your belief system, and reach in and know your strengths and put them into practice.
Amen. Well said. Barbara Rubel.
I'm a speaker.
I love that. That New York coming out of you. New Yorker, right?
I'm a New Yorker. That's why
New
I'm a
New Yorker?
Yeah.
Barbara Rubel, thank you so much, my friend. I'm so happy that you're right down the block. We have to meet and have coffee.
Thank you.
All this is going to be up in the show notes. If you like what you hear, please reach out to Barbara. Book her for your next conference. She's a wonderful person and obviously does amazing work with first responders. Barbara, you rock. Stay in touch.
Thank you.